Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, January 28th, 2017. This is episode 1358. Before we get to the show, a little reminder that we're doing our annual survey of our audience. We'd love to know who you are, what you listen to on the Twit Network, what your favorite shows are, what your least favorite shows. No personal information is collected, but it helps us make better shows for you and helps us sell our advertising. If you don't mind taking a couple of minutes to take the survey, just visit twit.tv/survey. And I thank you very much. Now, the Tech Guy Show. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here. I'm the Tech Guy. You heard of me? No. Well, that's okay. So, here's what we do. We talk about technology. What a thought. Yes, it's a call-in show. You can call and ask questions about computers. I still talk a lot about Windows and Mac and stuff in Linux once in a while. You can ask about the internet. We talk about that a lot because that's, after all, changing our world one step at a time, one node at a time, as it were. We talk about smartphones because that's the computer everybody's using these days. Smart watches. Some people call that the sidecar for your smartphone. And it's about as useful. Fitness watches, though. Those are good. We talk about those. What else? Home theater coming up in about half an hour. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, to talk a little bit about big screen TVs, surround sound, all of that. You know, anything with a chip in it. Microwave ovens, refrigerators these days. Phone number if you want to call in, talk, make a suggestion, ask a question, 8888, ask Leo. Just think of two pianos side by side, 88 keys on each, 8888, and on the middle, I'm lying across them like the fabulous Baker Boys. Like Michelle Pfeiffer just humming a tune, and that's me, and you can ask me, what are you doing on those pianos? 88, see how easy it is to remember now? Maybe not. 88, that's an image you don't want. 8888, ask Leo. That's toll-free in the U.S., because we're all over the country, and Canada, because someday we hope to be all over Canada. And we were for a while. We had a couple of Canadian affiliates on the Tech Guy Radio Network. And if you're outside that area, we do have, thanks to the internet, a lot of listeners all over the world. And that's great. Love that. And you can also reach us if you use Skype at that number. Because it's a toll-free number in the U.S., it shouldn't cost you anything. Website, it's good to remember. That's where I put, I don't do it. We have people, my people. Put James DeRuvo, he's my people. And he puts all the links as I talk, all the stuff, all the questions and answers are there. Even audio and video of the show afterwards. And it's all searchable. It's great. TechGuyLabs.com. That's the website. Actually, I can't remember. I think I got 8888AskLeo.com. Why not, right? I wonder if I maintained it. Let me just type that in, see what happens when you go there. No, I own it, but it doesn't go anywhere. I'll fix that. Then you could type that in, too. TechGuyLabs.com. So I read... It's the end of the world. Did you not know that? Well, a lot of the what if you were a billionaire? If you were the like top when the top 500, I wonder what you would do if you started. You know, and this has been going on for some time. If you started looking out there and you said, "I don't know," you know, it feel like the general political consensus running this country seems to be crumbling. There's infighting. I'm worried about running out of food, nuclear war, power grid getting knocked out, whatever, something terrible happening, what would you do? You would, if you had unlimited funds, you'd build a hidey hole, wouldn't you? Article this week in the New Yorker about what the Silicon Valley elite are doing to prepare for doomsday. It's by Evan Osnos, Doomsday Prep for the Super Rich. Apparently, it's all the rage. I remember before the election, some of the very liberal Silicon Valley elite were talking about what country they would move to if Donald Trump got elected. I noticed none of them went. But apparently there was a land boom believe it or not, a land boom in New Zealand. That was the consensus. Go to New Zealand. Now, that doesn't seem like a good idea, but there's a lot of richies who now have very nice homes in New Zealand. That's a good vacation. Long flight. But then there's other strange things. For instance, he interviews Steve Huffman, who was one of the founders, along with Alexis Ohanian, of Reddit, the big site. And he sold Reddit for hundreds of millions of dollars to Condé Nast. He has some money. He has a little bit of money there. And one of the things he's worried about, and I never really thought about this, do you wear glasses? I wear glasses or contacts. He says if the world ends, this is a direct quote, and not even if the world ends, if we have trouble, getting contacts or glasses is going to be a huge pain in the... So without them, I'm... So what did he got LASIK. And I mentioned this to Heather Hammond because you got LASIK this week yourself. You got the laser surgery, right, that makes it so you don't need to wear contacts or glasses. Well, good news, Heather. If the world comes to an end, you're going to be able to see what's going on, and I'm going to be wandering around like Mr. Magoo.
Oh,
what is that? Is that a guy? Is that a grocery store?
Leo, take my hand.
You're going to have to lead me. So I think that's really cool that you did that. You know, I looked into it at one point. That's they call it, and I shouldn't. You don't want to tell somebody this before they get it. Zap, flap, and zap. Where they anyway, it's laser eye surgery. Well, we don't need to go into the details. It's laser eye surgery that makes your eyes could be 20/20. Are you going to be 20/20 when you're done with this?
Well, I went for mono vision, so I'm not sure what we would.
Well, this is why I didn't do it, okay? Because the doctor said, okay, but you'll still have to wear glasses past 40,
right?
Because then you have to wear reading glasses. And I thought, well, if I still have to wear glasses, I don't know what I've gained. But I guess if the world has come to an end, reading isn't going to be a high priority. You know, the ability to see the buffalo and hunt it down is going to be much more important. So that's why Steve Huffman got LASIK. So now you're in good company in case the world ends.
Yay.
Yeah. Some of these guys, though, are going to great extent. Apparently, near Wichita, Kansas, there's an abandoned missile silo. We built them in the 60s, abandoned it in 65. And... A developer has bought it and turned it into something. It's called the Survival Condo Project. And they start they're from $1 to $3 million for these condos. They're sold out apparently, according to the developer, and they're deep underground in case of nuclear attack. He's put what he's done is kind of clever. He's put in big screens. So that you can, it looks like a window. You're looking outside, even though you're well below the surface. One of the people who rented the or bought the condo was from New York City. She wanted a camera looking out at her view in New York City, so they filmed, you know, a few days of that, and now she can just have that, even though the world has come to an end. She's living in a bunker deep below the surface of the earth. I don't think they've really thought this out. Do you have a hospital down there? Did you bring in doctors? Are you going to have doctors and nurses? What if somebody gets appendicitis? How long are you going to be under there? They say they can be there indefinitely because they've got hydroponics and they've got solar. It's actually a couple of hours out of Wichita, in case you want to visit, maybe pick up one. It's in the town of Concordia, and it's guarded by guards with semi-automatic weapons, and the Survival Condo Project. It's 15 stories built in an underground Atlas missile silo. Larry Hall, the guy who built it, said it's true relaxation for the ultra-wealthy. They can come out here. They know there are armed guards outside. The kids can run around. Not outside, obviously. Wow. He started building it after September 11th. He said, yeah, maybe we ought to have a missile silo, a condo. They're stockpiling gold, all the traditional things. One entrepreneur bought an island up in the Pacific Northwest outside Seattle, where he's put everything he'll need to survive, including massive amounts, apparently, of ammunition. Because after all, if you've got a nice place, somebody's going to try to take it to you in the end times. I'm going to stay in this country, and I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I think that's the best plan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Now that she can see so clearly, she probably is going to be able to pick out exactly the right callers for us, because they will be, I don't know, you'll be able to see exactly how they look, right?
Oh, boy, howdy. Eric in Fort Worth, Texas is looking amazing this morning, but he's got some bad news about his new home.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. All right, thank you. You even look better. You look better to me, and I didn't even get the surgery. I don't know. Eric in Fort Worth, Texas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I've listened to you for 3 years. It's the first time ever calling.
That's what we call a long-time-ish listener, first-time-ish caller. I say ish only because I've been doing this show since 2004.
So, and I've only been listening for 3 years.
3 years is barely enough. Anyway, I'm just teasing you. What can I do for you?
About a year ago, I signed a contract to have a house built for me.
Nice.
In Fort Worth. And this was right around the time when there was a major, I'll say, internet company sold to another one in the state of Texas and California, and I think a few others. I don't know if we can say those names.
Yeah, of course, please. I always like to name names. Let's not hold back.
Okay, well, at the time, Verizon sold to Frontier.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And somehow in that transfer, my community was supposed to go with Verizon Fios, but somehow during that transition, there has not been any lines laid in the community, so there is no internet connection in my community.
At all?
No, and the builder is advising us to get a cellular data connection for our home.
Oh, my goodness. So are you kind of far out of town?
No, we're right, like, on the north side of Fort Worth.
That's crazy.
Yes.
So you're in an urban area. There's no cable either for television?
There's no cable, there's no telephone, there's no internet in the community, but they advise us to get Dish Network or DirecTV. But I don't care for TV. I just need internet.
Yeah, yeah. Nowadays, you can get all the TV you want on the internet. Yeah. Wow. That builder kind of messed up. What if they built a development and forgot to connect it to the rest of the world?
Yeah, and I need like 1,000 gigabytes a month, so I cannot pay that much.
No.
Your data.
So your only connection at this point is from the phone company, and they do offer DSL, I'm sure, right?
That's the problem. There's no phone lines in this community either. They said everything right now is going to be cellular.
Wow, I would bet you there's a couple of lawsuits coming down the pike over that.
Well, that's what I'm frustrated about. I've checked with the city development. They said it's up to between AT&T U-verse or Frontier.
Yeah, let the buyer beware is what they're saying. Oh, well, too bad. You blew it. You bought it. Now you own it. Ha ha.
They're just now telling us this.
See, I could see them saying that about her internet because, you know, internet's new and, not, you know, maybe not everybody acknowledges the fact that it's probably a necessity in this age. But phone service? What if you have an emergency?
Oh, I did. I called the police department, and I asked them, hey, is this allowed to happen? Can they get an occupancy permit for this place that has no landline 911 access?
And what'd they say? And
they said it's up to the the builder or the developer to put that in. They don't have any control over that.
Wow. Well, yeah. That's probably a state regulatory matter, and you live in the free state of Texas. And so there you go. Where the West begins.
Yes.
So what do you do? Well, you're kind of that's terrible. I think you have a reasonable case against the builder. I gather it's that the builder had assurances from but maybe not. You know, maybe the builder's just saying that. Assurances that they were going to put a phone line in there.
Well, one time they thought Verizon was going to do it, but then this was happening right at the time a year ago when that sold out, and somehow our community.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Are you in the Fort Worth city limits?
Yes, I am.
Well, that's also the kind of thing that the Fort Worth City Council is supposed to protect you against.
Think about the city council.
Yeah, that's the city is supposed to protect you against that kind of thing, and they obviously dropped the ball as well. I don't know what the zoning requirements are, and I guess there's nothing to say about that. So let me help you see if you can find some internet. Your choices are going to boil down to some sort of wireless solution, since you have no wires going into your house, and that is either cellular or satellite. Satellite's getting better, but they both have severe restrictions on bandwidth caps.
Yeah, my mother-in-law has it. She has 12 gigs a month.
Yeah, which is not even close to what you need.
No.
Yeah, it's funny, Comcast keeps sending me notices saying you've used more than your terabyte. I don't know how. I'm not doing anything unusual at all. These bandwidth caps are we're just going to have to get used to this, because we're in a new time when government regulation is being eliminated and there's nothing to protect us against predatory internet service providers. And since in most areas of the country we are down to two at most, in some areas one, there's no competition, there's no market at place at all, you don't have any choice. And so now we're just at the mercy of predatory companies.
What do you do about like AT&T UVerse and say Verizon FiOS or Frontier? They don't compete. They never overlap in their territories, is from what I understand.
That's right. They have civic monopolies. That's why it comes down to the city government, because what happens with cable and phone companies is they're given a franchise for that area. The theory was it's so expensive to run wires that we can't expect multiple companies to do that. So in each jurisdiction, the city is going to choose an incumbent, a phone company and a cable company, and that incumbent is going to have a regional monopoly. And it's up to the city to enforce the rules of that regional monopoly, such as universal access. The state may get involved as well. I don't know if Texas has anything like a public utilities commission, but
I never thought about talking to the city council, but I will. I did talk to the permitting office, and they said it's pretty much up to the utilities.
call your state PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, because that's their bailiwick too.
Okay.
But you do live in a state where it's a fairly libertarian state, and it may be that there is no government requirement to do that. In which case, you're on your own. You're a plucky do it yourself, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps kind of guy. So now it's up to you, and I think you got to look for wireless. There are sometimes kind of oddball, offbeat wireless internet service providers using microwave and other choices. And so you're going to have to look for that. The one thing you might want to do is, since you have a whole community of people who don't have internet and phone, is band together. This is happening more and more often, to form a co-op to pay for, as a co-op, fiber to be drug out there, and then you become your own community internet. And that may be the best solution. It's going to take some organizing, some work, and yes, some money, but that may be the best solution. Do it yourself, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Perfect illustration. I don't even know what to say. You just got to do it yourself. But you know, I'll give you some resources for doing it yourself. Because people have gone this road before of community internet, and it really, if you can get it working, is probably the best solution. You'll have to pay to backhaul to bring in a big fat pipe to your neighborhood.
Okay.
I'm looking at Van Zandt County, Texas, where they have done this. They've created a community internet. In some cases, this is illegal. Some states have been lobbied by the big internet service providers to prevent this. Community internet is really, I think, the right solution for you. Okay. Let me see if I can find a link.
This is weird because we're right in Fort Worth.
Good news because that means you'd be able – the farther you are from the nearest interconnect, the more expensive because you're going to have to trench and all that. I think community internet is actually – may end up being a good way to do this. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an article. It's from a few years ago from Slate that has a lot of information. And then let me put that in the chat room so we can get that in the show notes. And then we'll put some more links to a friend of mine does this, is an advocate for this. And there are really a lot – if you search for community internet, you'll see – some stuff, but there's some people who've done the legal work and even the technical groundwork to make this doable.
Okay.
I think that's probably your best bet because satellite's very expensive for very little with big caps. Same thing with cell service. So, in the interim, I guess the builder's right. Cell service is probably your best bet, but it's not going to give you what you want.
The model home in the community where the office is, they just have cellular internet in there. That's what they have.
Yeah. And you can't just use your cell phone. You actually have to go to the provider, whoever it is, and tell them that you want this for home internet because it's different.
Yeah, it's like a data card special.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. And also
I've used them before.
Yeah. All right. Well, but this is – when you're doing it in the home, so they have different plans.
Okay.
I think community internet is going to be the right solution. It's been done in Texas before, so which is not surprising because I think that's probably the problem is that that there aren't strong regulations in Texas for protecting you against something like this.
Yeah, I'm kind of picking up on that. So.
Yeah, everybody's saying, well, it's not, sorry. It seems like you'd have a good lawsuit against the builder, but maybe not.
I don't know. But I've been calling Frontier and AT&T U-verse and tell them, hey, there's 108 homes out here.
It's not enough.
About to sell.
So expensive that it's not enough. But it might be enough for you to do it yourself.
Okay.
Hey, good luck.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. That's very frustrating. Very frustrating. Hi, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo Laporte. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. Just heard the Canadian Brass play last night.
Oh, they're amazing, aren't they?
Oh, man. They are so great. They've been my heroes since college. And there's only one original member still in the group.
Really?
Yeah, the tuba player.
Oh, damn it. I wish he'd go so that you could take over.
No, man. He was doing stuff. I mean, he's, roughly my age, more or less, and
you have to build up some lung power if you're going to do the tuba thing. Speaking of vision, here's the guy in charge of our big screen TVs, our surround sound equipment, Mr. Scott Wilkinson, editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum and host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. Welcome.
Good. Thank you.
What's up in the world of home theater these days?
Hey, I just posted a piece I wanted to make sure you were aware of called 8 Best TVs to Host a Super Bowl Party.
Oh, it's time, isn't it? Next Sunday.
It's time. Sunday is the Super Bowl.
Is this the big TV buying season?
It is. As I said in the article, most people think, oh, Black Friday, that's the time to buy TVs. But actually, you can often get even better deals around Super Bowl time because we're now into the first quarter of the year, and new TVs, this year's models, will start coming out in, the spring, March, April, so on.
So prices go down now.
Yeah.
Plus, they know you're going to be buying, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, I like it that number one on this list is the one that you talked me into. It better be number one. No. I love my LG B6 OLED. OLED display is gorgeous.
Yep. Yep.
It's 4K.
For this TV buying guide or list, I wanted to make sure I focused on two things. I focused on brightness, how bright it can be, because if you're having a Super Bowl party, you're going to have it in the, you know, in some light, right? It's not going to be in a dark room. You're not like you're watching a movie. And I wanted wide viewing angles, because with a lot of people in the room, some people are going to be off to the side. And with a lot of LCD TVs, that starts looking kind of funky.
Yeah.
Kind of washed out. The blacks aren't very good.
So OLEDs pretty bright? Because I know plasmas are not.
No. And OLEDs are brighter than plasmas used to be, but they're not as bright as LCD TVs.
Okay.
They're only roughly about half as bright. But they are bright enough, in my opinion, to serve well in a reasonably well-lit room.
I had to turn mine down after you came
well,
in and calibrated it. And you warned me about this because I'm watching in a dark room,
yeah,
and it was hurting my eyes. So yeah, I did turn the brightness down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Which it's better to turn down what's called in an OLED called the cell light.
I think
the
that's
OLED
what I did,
light.
Yeah. Because you told me to do that, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Because that takes everything just down.
Right.
If you fiddle with the brightness control, you can mess up the calibration that
right.
I did. So right. Thank you for doing that.
I did it right. Of course, that's it because I'm in a darkened room. But when you watch the Super Bowl, usually you're in a bright room with a lot
of people.
You're
in a bright room, and you got people around, and they're coming and going, and so on and so forth. So I wanted to highlight TVs that had good brightness and had good viewing angle. And my source for this information is a website that I really like called rtings.com, RTING.com. It's a TV review site where they take a bunch of measurements and they assign scores to just about every performance parameter you can think of. So I went to their list of, and they also categorize by best for what application, sports, movies, games. And so I looked at their list of the best sports TVs and filtered by brightness, peak brightness, and viewing angle. And TVs that got high scores in both of those made it onto my list.
Who are these Artings people?
Well, you know, I don't know them personally.
I guess Artings is ratings without the A. I get it now.
Correct.
So they don't just do TVs. They do a bunch of stuff.
Well, they're mostly TVs.
Oh, no, TVs and headphones. Oh.
Yeah, TVs and headphones. Okay. But they do extensive testing. And as far as I know, they're not unlike Consumer Reports in that they buy their TVs rather than get them from the manufacturer, which adds a measure of credibility as well.
I like that, yeah. Right now, just TVs and headphones.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure they're going to expand as long as they get the...
Well, the name like Artings.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not TV Artings.
Yeah. Now, a couple people in that piece that I wrote already have left some comments. Well, hey, what about the Vizio? The Vizio P series and M series, which I often recommend. And the reason I didn't include them, and I want to make this very clear, is that they were reviewed by Artings, and they got very high marks on peak brightness, but very low marks on viewing angle.
Oh.
And that's because they are, for the most part, they use a particular type of LCD panel, which is called VA, or vertically aligned. Technical term, doesn't really matter what it means. What the result is, though, is that the viewing angle is not as good. The black levels are better, but the viewing angles are not as good as the other type of LCD panel, which is called IPS, in-plane switching. So the LCD TVs in my list are all IPS because they have wide viewing angles. They don't have as good blacks. And so, you know, that may be of concern to some people, but this is an article about, you know, best TVs for watching the Super Bowl in a party.
Well, and that's important because a viewing angle may not matter to you after the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
But for during the Super Bowl, if you're going to have more than one person watching the game.
Yeah, more than a couple.
More than a couple. I guess two can always can see pretty well.
You can sort of sit pretty close to the center and it'll be fine. Yeah, exactly. I absolutely point that out in my little comments about each TV of, you know, hey, this is going to be great for the Super Bowl, but it doesn't have the great blacks.
Right.
That if you're watching with a couple people in a darkened environment, it's not going to be as satisfying.
Good.
You know, ultimately, I say, you know, if you can afford it, get an OLED. Now, OLEDs are more expensive, of course, because the yields are low. It's a more expensive manufacturing process. They're coming down in price quite a bit, but they're still more expensive than your typical LCD TV.
Yeah, list price on that B6
for a 65-inch is $4,000, which is...
Right, but on Amazon now, they're selling it for under $3,000.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it is certainly you can get a $1,000 65-inch TV. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah.
And for most people, that will be the more sensible thing. But if you're looking for quality of image...
Mm-hmm. OLED's the way to go.
OLED's the way to go. So, all right. So that's good to know. And is it okay to buy online? Is it okay to buy on Amazon?
I think so. I absolutely think so. I've bought quite a few things on Amazon. So I don't have any problem with that. Now, you know, returns, I mean, shipping a TV back if it's broken or has some problem.
What I did, I bought my B6 there. And they have something called white glove delivery service.
Oh, that's cool.
And that was, I don't think, an additional charge, or maybe it was $50. But what they do is they bring it in, which is nice because I've had delivery service where they'd actually just put it in the driveway, which is not really good.
For a TV, not that good. No.
They open up, and it's got fairly elaborate packaging. It should, to protect it, including it's wood. So they took off, and they take all the packaging away, and then they set it up. And they let you look at it before they leave.
Wow, so, that's super.
And I think that's important. So that you look, what would you look for if you were, you know, you had a new TV, you had it on. What would you look for, like, cosmetically or?
Yeah, you'd look for damage around the bezel or something like
maybe,
that.
Maybe stuck pixels.
Yeah, that'd be a good thing to look for. Absolutely.
So they'll appear as black or white dots. So you'd want to put a white image up and then a black image up to look for. And so, you know, a certain number of those is considered okay, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't
think Vizio does have a zero dead pixel policy, so that's good on that.
I think that's really good. And that's only there's no such thing as a stuck pixel in OLEDs, or is there?
No, there can be.
Oh, there can be, because they're dots too. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is all good information.
Good.
Where will you be watching the big game?
Oh, I don't. Well, I record it. I only watch the commercials. I'm only interested in the commercials.
Well, yeah,
I don't watch
surprised.
The game itself. On the halftime show, maybe. I'll be watching the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's important to have a good TV for that, too. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geeks, twit.tv/HTG. The Puppy Bowl.
I love the Puppy Bowl.
There's a guy, a Silicon Valley kind of legend named Brad Templeton. He was one of the early creators of... Usenet, and he is a self-driving car expert and stuff. And every year he has a Super Bowl commercial viewing party at the he has it at Singularity University. And yeah, people go and they just look at the commercials.
Yeah, that's all I'm interested in. I have such a bad feeling about football generally because of all the concussions and the health problems that have become to light recently. Boxing the same. It's just not interesting to me.
Yeah.
It's kind of commercials are interesting.
It's kind of like boxing, isn't it?
It is kind of like boxing. Yeah. I think so. Commercials are interesting to me. The halftime show, maybe. I don't even know who's on the halftime show this year.
Lady
know?
Gaga.
Oh, she's great.
Lady Gaga.
I really like Lady Gaga. I mean, she has a seriously good voice.
Who
no question
love
about it.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah. If she's on Super Bowl, then Super Bowl halftime, then I will definitely watch that. I record the show and then I zip through the game. I watch the commercial.
Well, the truth is, and I've mentioned this statistic before, there is in an average NFL game exactly 11 minutes of action.
Oh, really?
And the rest
is 3 hours?
Out of 3 hours. The rest is standing around, commercials, huddles, you know. So you could, in fact, I think, you know, they do on some of the networks, they'll show the edited down versions of the games, and they're like half an hour. but even that's too much.
Even that,
11
exactly.
minutes if you TiVo it and just go to where they're actually running around and hitting people.
Right. When the clock is actually running.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's a little less than that because the clock runs. I don't want to get in the arcane rules of football.
Yeah. That's okay.
All yours, Scotty. You got a few minutes here. I'll set up the special.
The special clock.
Instead
Thank
of this, you,
so
you don't want to watch that. You want to watch this.
That.
There you go.
User 1601 is asking, does refresh rate matter as much on an OLED as it does on an LED, really LCD TV? And the answer is yes. And I talk about this in the Super Bowl party TV article as well. There's a there, there's something called motion blur, and refresh rate is important to allow the TV to do something about motion blur. And this is especially important in sports, right? You got a football flying through the air, you got hockey players running around or skating around, and things go very fast. And so it on an LCD TV and on an OLED, it turns out, that looks very blurry. And there are ways to combat that if the TV has a high enough refresh rate. And the reason that OLEDs have that same problem is that they reproduce the frames in the same way as an LCD TV with a process called sample and hold. And basically what that means is the entire frame is shown on the screen for the entire duration of the frame, as opposed to LCD plasma TVs, which showed each frame quickly, up to 10 times per frame. And that actually helped reduce motion blur. And so LCD TVs and OLEDs as well actually flash the backlight. They turn off the backlight once or more times during each frame. And that does clean up motion blur. Another thing to do is called frame interpolation, which really cleans up motion blur. But it also introduces an artifact called the soap opera effect, which is not very good. So that is that's why it's good for OLEDs to have a higher refresh rate as well as LCD TVs. And I think I'm just about out of time here, but happy to stick around
at
the top of the hour.
We'll see you at the top of the hour. Thank you, Scott.
You betcha.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. The phone number, if you want to talk high tech, oh, I'd love to talk high tech with you. Terry, Orange, California. Hi, Terry.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Hey, fine. Hey, I have just a quick question. So when I get in my new car and my cell phone is connected to the Bluetooth system in the car, when I want to make a phone call, it bypasses the lock screen on my phone. I have an Android phone. And in my own truck, of course, I don't have that. I have two kinds of headsets. And I have to manually unlock the phone. Is there some software or headset that will do like my car does? It just bypasses the lock when I want to make a call?
That's very interesting. How does it do that? You know, I never really thought about it.
I don't know, and I've looked and looked, and I can't find how they do that, but there must be something when the two devices pair in the car that
so,
gives it access.
Yeah, so you're in your truck, there's still Bluetooth, right?
No, there isn't.
Ah.
I'm using a Bluetooth headset.
Got it. But you're using Bluetooth in your car, in your truck. It's just not the car's Bluetooth. So, I'm gonna mute you for a second. We're getting some wind noise. But in Android, there is a feature, and I think it started with Marshmallow, Android 6.0, that will let you, when you pair with a Bluetooth device, it'll ask you, would you like this to be a trusted device? And you say yes. And then, and this is specifically to address this, it will unlock the Android phone whenever you're paired with that Bluetooth device. So I'm not sure. Maybe you have an older phone that doesn't do that, but I'm pretty sure that was added specifically to give you this feature. And for instance, I have my Pixel, which is the Android phone I carry right now. When I'm in the car, it doesn't lock. In fact, now it goes into auto mode, unlocked and auto mode, because the car, when I pair with the car, it becomes a trusted device. It may be that they built that feature in kind of for car manufacturers only, kind of a hidden feature prior to Android 6. I'm not sure when it started, but that's what I'd look for. So when it happens automatically when you pair something new, it'll say, do you want this to be a trusted device? Do you want to unlock whenever we're paired with it? But if you've already paired with it, I'm going to have to look and see how you can, after the fact, choose trusted device. I'm sure you can. It's in the settings. Let me see if I can find it in my settings where the it's probably under security, I'm going to guess. Let me look here. I think it's under the smart lock. Now, I'm using, of course, Android 7.0. Smart lock will recognize
when it's in your pocket or you're at home. Oh, but it's in the same area. There's trusted devices. So you can, when you're, you have to do this. It's weird. You have to do it when you're paired, when the device is paired. So what you should do is get in your truck, put on your headset, and then go into the security settings of your phone and look for smart lock. It's an Android 6 and it's an Android 7. And you'll be asked to give it your PIN to verify that you own this device and the phone. Then you can add a trusted device. But it has to be paired. It won't see it unless it's paired. So then press add trusted device. You can choose it by a Bluetooth or NFC, which is kind of interesting. The reason they say NFC is some people do this. They put a little NFC tag. It's just a little sticker on the dashboard. And they tap their phone to it and unlocks the phone and keeps it unlocked. I guess, I don't know, until you tap it again, I'm not sure, you lock it manually. So I would guess that's how it's working. Dr. Mom says Android 5 also has it. So trusted devices. I'm not sure it was in all phones with Android 5. It might have been it's Motorola started it with the Moto X way back when. And this was when they were owned by Google. And I suspect what happened is it migrated to the rest of Google. So that'd be my guess. Try that. See if it works. Kyle's in Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Yeah, I have Google Project Fi, and I switched phones from Nexus 6 to the new Google Pixel. And Google is informing me I need a new SIM card, a version 2 SIM card.
Oh, really?
Do you know anything, you know anything about the version 2 SIM cards?
I do not. I'm not sure why you would need a new SIM card. Maybe they're doing something different. Did I take my SIM card along with me when I moved to the Pixel? I think I got a new one. You know, when you buy a Pixel from Fi, you'll get a SIM card in it, and you can just activate that new SIM card. And I think they only charge you $10 for a replacement card. You don't have to.
My Nexus 6 was so old, and the SIM card is old, and it doesn't work with the new phone.
I wonder, maybe what it is one of the things they've done on Google Fi is they've added carriers. Remember they signed a deal with U.S. Cellular? They've changed how it works internationally. I'm wondering if you need the new SIM card to support that new feature. I'll have to do some research. You stumped me. I'm going to turn over all the cards because I don't know what's new in the new SIM card. But why not get the new one? I find, one of the things about Google Fi I really like is that it does AT&T and Sprint and Wi-Fi. So it'll figure out which carrier or your own Wi-Fi is best and use that. And it transitions seamlessly. So when I'm on a phone call with my Google Fi phone in the office, then I get in the car and drive off, and then Sprint's better because I've lost the Wi-Fi, it'll make that transition. The call doesn't drop. You don't hear any transition. It works beautifully. And they've added some other carriers to that. And I would guess that's why the SIM card 2.0. I don't know if it's size. I can't remember. Did the Nexus 6 take a nano SIM or did it have a bigger SIM? Might have had a bigger SIM in it.
I believe it was a nano SIM.
All right. Well, that's the smallest. That's the ones the new ones use is these little tiny weeny SIMs. I don't know. It probably, maybe they added capability. I'll do some research and find out for you. How do you like Google Fi? Are you happy?
I love it. I've had it for about a year now, maybe over a year.
I love the idea that it uses multiple carriers, and that's unique to it. The downside of Google Fi, I mean, in every respect, it's multiple carriers. Its pricing is transparent. You pay $20 for unlimited texts and phone calls, and then you pay $10 a gigabyte or fraction thereof. For your data. So you only pay as you go for data. And when you travel internationally, same price. Calls, I think they charge you more for international calls. That's it. And it's very reasonable. The negative is you have to have a Google phone. So you have to have a Nexus 6 or one of the Pixel phones. But that's I think the Pixel phones are the best Android phones out there anyway. So that's not a sacrifice. Just a sacrifice for your wallet since they are also the most expensive.
Yeah.
I will do some research for you and come up with an answer. Tell you what, we're going to get a break for news at the top of the hour. This would be a good time for me to figure out what's the difference in these new 2.0 SIMs. They charge you, but I wonder if they charge you if you just you need the upgrade because of them. They shouldn't charge you $10. I don't think so. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up.
You're out.
City of stars, Are you shining bright for me? I'll tell you what spoiled that show for me.
Yeah, what's that?
Ryan Gosling can't sing, and neither Ryan nor Emma can dance.
That's right.
And I like a musical where they can sing and dance.
That's right.
And I'll be honest with you, I don't even think the music was all that catchy.
Well, see, I did.
You liked it?
I really liked the music.
Okay, so tell me, hum another song from that show.
You put me on the spot.
So most musicals, you come out, you're singing the songs.
You're singing the songs, yeah.
I thought it was beautiful. I mean, I enjoyed it. Is it worth 14 nominations? I don't know.
No, I absolutely do not think so.
Yeah, yeah. What was your movie of the year?
Well, my movie of the year is Billy Lynn, but it got no nominations.
No, and terrible reviews.
I know, but in my opinion, it was great.
I'll be watching that. Yeah. I really liked Manchester by the Sea. It was very.
I haven't seen
it's
that
grim,
one.
Grim, but
I don't like grim.
It's
movies.
Well acted. And
I'm
it's,
sure
it's
that's
quite
true.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. The movie I really want to recommend is Hidden Figures.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, man, that is a great movie.
I do want to see that. I saw Moonlight, and that's kind of grim.
Your car is running yeah. away.
Oh, my God, Lisa's stealing my car. You know, I had a dream that Lisa pushed my Tesla into the pool. We don't even have a pool. But I told her, I woke up, I said, why did you put my Tesla in the pool? And I was like I'd lost a limb. I was very upset.
Oh, man.
Isn't that funny?
Still half asleep?
Yeah, I was still half asleep. All right, all yours, Scotty.
Thank you so much. I'm just looking up Oscar nominations here because I wanted to see what was being nominated.
Fences is very good, too.
Yeah, I did not. Okay, yeah, it took me a while. Oh, I really wanted to see Arrival. I haven't seen that yet, and I really would like to. It's a thoughtful sci-fi, not just aliens shoot 'em up. Oh, yeah, I see. I didn't actually see many of these movies. I saw La La Land. Fences, I've heard, is really good. Lions, another one. I mean, all these are getting really good reviews. None of them are exactly my cup of tea, though. I did hear an interview with Jeff Bridges. He's in Hell or High Water that sounded pretty good. Heard some clips from that. I'll be doing more writing about the Oscars here next week, I'm sure. Loquacious. Well, you know how those Oscars go. They usually don't make a lot of sense in the choices they make. Yeah, sometimes yes, sometimes no. At least this year, they have some actors and people of color. And it's true, Goggle Recall. I am a jazz fan, and that's why I like the songs, one of the reasons, in La La Land. Just Another Day of Sun, another good one. Yeah, Beatmaster, Hidden Fences. That is a fabulous movie. iPhone 25665. If I have to mount my soundbar too high or too low and have no other choice, which is preferable? Ooh, that's a good question. I'd say probably too high. Because if it's too low, you might have things in the way. Now, sound diffracts around things, you know, so it's not that big a deal. But if it's up high, there probably is less chance of something obscuring the sound from getting directly to you. That's, you know, it's too bad if you have no other choice, but I would say too high. Yo, Dave, any good universal remotes for senior citizens with poor vision, a.k.a. big button that can handle cable box, DVD, etc.? You know, that's a good question. Normally, my recommendation for universal remotes is Logitech Harmony, but I don't think they have any with big buttons. I'm sure there are quite a few. I've seen them at Radio Shack and places like that, universal remotes with big buttons. It might not be quite so easy to program to operate a cable box, DVD player, TV, etc., which is one thing you've asked here. But they do exist. I'd have to do a little research on that to find them. But they do exist, I'm sure. Marsworm, have I seen The Founder? No, but I'd like to see that one as well. I think that one would be good. Arrival will Beatmaster. Arrival gets a re-release with bonus material. That'll be good. M. Heiss, Mike. No one ever left the theater humming the scenery. And no one ever left the theater humming the frame rate. Well, I did. On Billy Lynn's long halftime walk, I did. And since I saw that movie, I now see every problem with 24 frames on every other movie. Even if the movie's great in every other way, man, I find myself wishing for high frame rate. Now, that's not a universal opinion. There are quite a few people who just don't like it. And that's fine. You're welcome to your opinion. But I really wish it were being used a lot. Click Track loved Arrival. Yeah, I really want to see that. Deepwater Horizon, I didn't see. I've got the Ultra HD Blu-ray. And Goggle Recall. They don't mention the jazz in the promos. Yeah, the jazz that. And one thing I have to give Ryan Gosling credit for is his finger movements when he's playing the piano are really good. Spot on for the most part.
Well, isn't he playing it? It looked like he really was playing it. I was impressed.
That's why I'm very impressed. Exactly right. I saw a couple of instances. I was looking kind of carefully too, and I saw it twice actually, and I was watching his fingers carefully, and there were a few moments when his fingers didn't correspond to what the sound was. But he, for the most part, it was right on the money. And I honestly don't know whether he was already a piano player. I mean, it looks like he must have been because the finger movements look very natural and very real.
It looked like he's really playing, and it didn't look like a double.
No. Well, I don't think it was. I had heard something in an interview or something that he had to learn to play piano.
Oh, he didn't know. Wow.
But if that's the case, it's even more impressive.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could probably – well, I don't know. I wonder if there's an auto-tune for finger movements. So, like, you could kind of play it slowly.
Kind of do it.
And then they match it up. I bet there is.
Might have been digital manipulation. Yeah. It might have been. It's hard to say. Man,
Didn't hire somebody? You know who would have been great is John Legend. And, you know, it's interesting because the trailer has John Legend singing through the whole thing. And you think, wow, this sounds great. And then Ryan's crap voice comes in. It would have been so much better and it may have been that, you know, the backers said, you have to have a movie star. But didn't they have first of all, should have been a black man, obviously, doing the jazz. Mm-hmm. And why wasn't it? John Legend would have been awesome. Maybe he can't act.
And wasn't that so amazing, though, that John Legend is in the movie?
Yeah, and he sounds great.
And he does, and he's a guitar player.
Yeah. He's the only. Yeah, well, that's weird.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. Doesn't he play the piano ever in that movie?
No, never.
How funny.
He hires the Ryan Gosling character to be his piano player.
That's right.
Where he's the guitar player.
Well, we don't want to spoil it, except we already have. Except we have. There's other good stuff.
There's other good stuff. And the ending is a little surprising. And we won't say more.
I love the ending.
Yeah, it was not your typical musical ending.
Fences was great. I think Fences is going to take many of the awards.
I hope so.
And I thought Manchester by the Sea was very, very good. I haven't seen Hidden Figures yet, but I will.
Hidden Figures, yeah. That's highly recommended.
Yeah.
I tend not to go to movies that are really depressing.
Moonlight and Manchester are grim, but I think they're very well done.
Well, then I should probably go.
Yeah. All right. You should go because it's time to get back to work. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Leo.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. Anything you're in the mood to talk about, if it has a chip in it, if it's technology related, I'd love to talk about it with you. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. Of course, use Skype or some sort of voice over the internet protocol, and it should work just great. Just great. I didn't do my research for the SIM card, too, but a good theory coming out of the chat room that maybe I Google Fi wanted you to upgrade the SIM is for multiple, for dual SIM capability. Maybe. Don't know. I've been looking. I didn't see a lot of it. You would think somewhere Google would explain all this. But you know how Google is. Google is this big black box. And any contact into the black box is often met with a human, but by a Python script. And so, but I'm very happy with it. In fact, already rumors that there is a next generation Pixel coming around the corner that will be, get this, even more expensive. Even more expensive. That they're going to make a better camera. They're going to do a lot of, stuff, including the new Qualcomm chip, which is a very fast chip. So I don't know when that will come out. We are approaching in a couple of months, this in March, the Mobile World Congress, the big telecom convention in Barcelona. And many companies announce new phones in the spring at Mobile World Congress. Traditionally, Samsung does, but they've already said, nope, we're not going to announce our new phone. We want to wait. I think what they want to do is wait a little longer after the Note 7, exploding Note 7 fiasco. Just let memories fade a little bit longer. They say we'll announce our new phone in April, the Galaxy S8. And by the way, here's some good news. The latest pictures of the S8, and they've been leaked by EvLeaks, Evan Blass, include a headphone jack. Hallelujah, because we were hearing rumors that even Samsung was going to follow Apple's lead and leave out the headphone jack. Come on! But the S8 will come out, be announced in April and available, I think, late April. And then that they also said, this is official, Samsung said, we're going to keep the Note brand. We're not going to change the name. And we will have a new Note. Well, they didn't say when, but typically that's the fall. So if you're a Samsung fan, and increasingly Samsung is the dominant Android platform, it's almost become Samsung versus Apple. You know, if you want an iPhone, you get an Apple because that's the only one you can get. And if you want an Android phone, Samsung. My personal favorite is not the Samsung phones. It's the Google Pixel phone.
Hey.
And I'll be, thank you. She responded. I said her name, and she said, "Hey," and I suspect that the Pixel update will come maybe a little sooner than a year because they want to keep up. They want to get in the same cycle as Samsung. That's who they're facing head to head. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Chuck is in Lake Havasu. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
First-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, sir. Glad to have you.
I've listened to you on KFI ever since you came on there, every time I go back to Southern California to visit my daughters.
They're so powerful. They probably reached to Arizona, actually.
No,
not quite.
I listen to you here on my Tap and my Echo.
Ah, nice. Yeah, you know, I noticed some radio personalities. I don't know what that is. Shh. My phone started talking some more. I noticed some radio shows are making custom Amazon Echo applications. Dave Ramsey just announced one, so you could just ask for him. And you have to know what to ask for to get our show. But you can. You could just say, Echo, listen to the Tech Guy on TuneIn, and you'll get the latest show.
Right. I just found TuneIn. I didn't know. I thought it was just iHeart.
Yeah. Well, TuneIn is
I just found TuneIn and listening to a bunch of radio stations that I never knew was even on there.
Yeah. Yeah. TuneIn is a competition to iHeart, but it's run longer and it has a lot of, I don't know, several tens of thousands of radio stations around the world are on TuneIn. And it's what's built into the Echo. So it's easy to, you know, if you want a radio show, try asking for it. Via, and you can say on TuneIn will help the Echo find it. Anyway, what can I do for you?
I heard you earlier, before my question, I heard you earlier talking about LASIKs and that.
Yeah.
They have, my wife is old, we're in our 60s, and my wife has cataracts. She's going to have them taken out. But used to be that Medicare only paid for, you know, one either distance or short or close and stuff like that.
You couldn't get both, you get one or the other.
One or the other and stuff like that. But they now have, when you get your cataracts out, they now have a progressive lens that they are approved.
Oh, you mean like I have progressive glasses, so when I look straight forward, I have the distance vision, and as I look down, which you do when you read, it changes the diopter, so my farsightedness is corrected. That's love progressive. So you can get that in LASIK?
In LASIK, I think in LASIK, but you get it with the cataracts, You know, they put the lens in when you have.
Oh, so, yeah, that's it. They're putting a lens in to replace your. I get it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like LASIK, I guess. You know, I guess
it's amazing. It's amazing what they're doing. What they're doing.
Before Medicare approved it, they were like $2,500 an eye.
Wow.
For progressive.
Wow.
So I imagine LASIKs would be a lot more too.
Wow.
So, anyway, to my problem.
Yes.
I have two sets of Sony wireless headsets. I'm blind.
Okay.
And my wife hates it when I have to have the TV up loud because any sounds in the room, if she's talking or we have, and I'm trying to listen to the TV.
You can't, I have the same problem. You can't distinguish multiple sound streams. It's just, yeah.
Right, right. Yep. It distracts you completely.
Yep.
Well, the TV I have in the living room, I bought in 2002, and it's a Mitsubishi rear projection. 55-inch.
Does it have a headphone jack?
It has the audio output jack.
Okay, good.
So I have it hooked up to that, and it's been that way for a long time. I've had them for quite a few years.
So you have wired headphones?
Oh, no, the headphones are wireless.
Oh, good. Yeah, I gave my mom the Sennheiser's wireless headphones for TV. Same thing, and she loves them.
Right. Well, the ones on the TV in the living room, they hooked up to the yellow and white audio output jacks, and then it's hooked up to a single line in the back of the base of the stand that you put the headsets on.
Yeah.
It charges them.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's also hooked up to 110, you know, to charge them and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can listen to them, and the Sony sets that I have, you have a... like 10 different channels in case one channel's not coming in correctly and stuff. You have a volume on
it. Wow, fancy.
And then the off and on switch.
Yeah.
And that. And I can listen to them, turn the volume up and down on it and stuff like that. And my wife, if she's in here listening to the same program, she can turn the TV up, but it's not as loud, you know, for her because she doesn't have to have it up really loud.
Okay.
Okay. And the volume works on it.
So you can use both. That's interesting, because usually, so if you had a headphone jack, it would cut out the TV speaker.
That's why I'm having a problem. And the one I have in the bedroom, I tried hooking it up, the other same as the one in here, to the audio output jacks, you know, the white and the yellow on the back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. It only works when I plug it into the headphone jack. It's an RCA, which is, you know,
yeah, so the headphone has, okay.
Anymore, you know,
yeah, the reason is you're getting two different levels out of the TV. The headphone jack is a higher level than the yellow, well, this red and white, which is next to the yellow. The composite output. The red and white is line level. So you'll need a little amplifier in between that and the headphones. That's all. And they're cheap. I would say get it at Radio Shack, but. Well, I guess you can't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
So that's the problem is the level. It's you're getting a different, much lower level. And by the way, I don't think you can change the volume coming out of the red and white. You can change the headphone jack volume is affected by the remote control, but not the red and white.
Okay. Yeah, so, that's the way it is in the bedroom. But it works that way, you know, on the front one, in the TV in the front room, the old Mitsubishi.
Yeah, they probably wired it differently.
Yeah.
So
maybe it was something like, you know, we have a thing. You used to be able to hook your camera up to your TV.
Yeah.
In the front of them and stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, there's input. And there's output, but make sure, so you right. What you want, so that the red and white is part of that trio, the red, white, and yellow, for right. Composite, what they call composite output. So if you're using the, out, if it says output, composite output, that red and white does have audio. I don't know if it's live all the time. It may be you have to go into the settings and have it be live.
Mm-hmm.
And you will almost certainly need an amplifier between it and the headphones. But you can get little inexpensive, $25 headphone amp would be plenty. And then you would set the volume on the headphone amp.
Yeah, I just thought it would be, you know, where if she was in the bedroom with me watching the TV or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Since I'm usually in there by myself anyway, so I'll just kind of leave it where it is. I just didn't know that there was, you know, if you plugged it in the headphone jack.
Yeah, it cuts the audio.
If we go to Vegas, she bowls a lot in Vegas. And if we take them, and the guy will actually hook them up for me to the TVs in Vegas.
Oh, that's nice.
And so I can use, if I don't have to have the darn TV up so loud and bothering other
Yeah, my mom loves it because she, in fact, I finally convinced my mom to get hearing aids. She said, well, I don't talk to anybody. I said, you're going to love it. I did as I lent her mine. I said, well, try these. They're not set for your hearing. And she loved it. She could hear everything. And she didn't talk as loudly because she could hear. And she said, okay, you convinced me. I said, I'll buy them for you, Mom.
What I have is when I have my ear, I call it my ears, when I have my headsets on, I'm trying to listen to the TV, and then she starts talking.
You can't hear her.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I know. My poor wife, when I put in my hearing aids, I say, shh, you're talking too loud. Because you can't win.
can I ask another question?
Sure.
On these new Chevrolet cars, and they say they're equipped with Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Now, is this something that you have to pay for if you use it?
Yeah, so it's got an LTE. Yeah, it's got an LTE card in it, LTE connection, and you do have to pay for it from the phone company.
Okay.
Unless,
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, on Teslas, they subsidize it because you paid so darn much for the car. That'd be a bit of an insult to make you pay $20 a month for additional connectivity. But I bet you anything in a Chevrolet, yeah, you have to pay for it.
Okay.
I remember in my Audi, I had to pay
asking,
for it.
Calling again to ask about another question, because we're thinking about getting rid of this rear projection in the living room and getting a
might be time, yeah,
screen for the wall.
You'd like it better. Yeah. It'd be brighter and easier to see and better quality.
Well, I can't see anything anyway.
That's the beauty. That's the beauty of aging. Everything looks better and sounds quieter.
Yeah.
I like the peacefulness.
She looks thinner and younger every day.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The nice bass sounds. Michael Cozio, our musical director. Peter, we had Lake Havasu in Arizona, and now we're going to go to Lake Geneva in Wisconsin. It's Lake Day on the show. Hello, Peter.
Hello there. I've got the ringing in my ears, too. So.
Oh, man. I tell you, too many rock and roll concerts in my youth.
Yeah, too long in radio.
Yeah, radio. Well, see, that's what happened is I listened to a lot of rock music in my youth, and then I got into radio, and now I wear headphones all day, and you know what happens. You turn them up a little bit more, a little bit more, a little more. That's why I'm a big advocate when you get your kids, you know, smartphones and they're listening to music on them, get some headphones that will automatically keep the music level below the damage threshold, because it's very easy, especially when you're a kid and you don't think about it. Just turn it up. Oh, it sounds better. It's loud.
But doesn't Samsung have a thing in their phones that...
they do, and I love that. Yeah. Most Android phones now will warn you if you're turning it up past the damage point. But Etymotics makes, Etymotics, makes in-ear headphones suitable for a phone that are for kids. They call it Etymotics Kids, that will not go above the damage level. And kids' ears, as you know, when they're much more easy to damage than us oldsters now.
Mm-hmm. I was in radio at 20.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Oh, well, we're paying for our sins, the sins of our youth.
Yeah, exactly.
What can I do for you today?
Well, the reason I called is I'm part of a nonprofit organization, and we're looking for some sort of database to use to keep track of our clients and things like that. And we also have a few remote people in that, so we're looking for something that, you know, the remotists would use, and also that is very good search functions and reporting.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a couple of ways to do this, if you want to really support the off-site folks, you can do this online. You know, basically, it's like a website. And so there are a lot of ways to do that. So keeping track of donors, people like that, contacts like that?
And contacts and what services we have given them, and if we have to follow up with anybody.
So there are some good solutions for nonprofits, and the reason I mention those is often they'll be less expensive. You know, they're
always a good thing.
Yeah, because nobody has any money. So there's a number of – I'm going to put this – if you go to nonprofithub.org, they have a whole listing of databases that are affordable for nonprofits that are dedicated to nonprofits. And they rank it by the size. How big is your nonprofit?
Oh, we've only got about 5-10 people.
I would look at Batchbook. It's $35 a month for an unlimited number of users, but you can try it free for 30 days. It's based on a donor database, and it's designed and it's online, so it's designed for people to use it remotely. They also have something called Donor Snap, which is a donor management system, and it'll integrate into QuickBooks accounting if you need that. Nonprofit Easy is another one. That's even less expensive. That's $20 a month. But there are lots of there are probably even good free solutions for keeping track of. So you can get databases that are freeform. You can store anything into. But somebody's going to have to write a front end for it, put it online. Then that really does add up, unless you're the geek who's going to donate all that effort. So I would say, unless you have somebody who's willing to help you like that, you're going to get a packaged program. You're going to start with something that's designed to do what you want to do. Normally when somebody asks me for a distributed data, that's what you're doing is a distributed database system. I'll mention FileMaker, which is a great company, and they make really nice stuff that you can highly customizable front ends. They can be beautiful, but that will be much more expensive. So we'll put a link to this nonprofithub.org and their article, which is a pretty recent article on databases suitable for nonprofit hubs. Nonprofits.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. The good news is, it's funny, the tech community, in a lot of respects, will offer low cost or free software to nonprofits. Even big companies like WordPress will have nonprofit pages. There's nonprofit websites. And since almost all nonprofits do that very basic function of keeping track of donors, how much they give, what kind of services you are offering them, I think you'd be pretty much able to find a good range of things there. This Nonprofit Hub is a great resource, nonprofithub.org. Alex, Studio City, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for asking.
Of course.
So my question is about cable box and channels and all these other alternatives to get channels on my TV. I pay about $150 right now a month for a cable.
Yeah.
And I don't see the value of paying that much money for channels that I don't necessarily watch all the time.
You're not alone. You're not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the alternative? What's the scoop with Sling and...
So there's three right now that are very big. There's, as you mentioned, Sling. These are what we call over-the-top services. So the cable industry loves these, you know, obscure acronyms and names. And over-the-top means instead of getting your television from their television service, you're getting it through the internet, over the top of their service. And so there are a number of over-the-top services that give you cable-like capabilities. My favorite is from Sony. It's called PlayStation View, V-U-E. But you should also look at Sling TV. And what you're going to look at is price for the channels that you want and what channels are available. Sony has a good deal with Showtime, for instance. So if you wanted the pay cable service Showtime, that would be a good one. And then the third one that's new has been having some growing pains, but is also partly having the growing pains because it's growing so much faster than they thought it would, is AT&T's DirecTV Now. I just read an article that said they expected about 60,000 subscribers in the first 3 months. They had 600,000, which shows you the demand for exactly what you want to do. It's called cord cutting. You're not really cutting the cord. You still have a cord. It's just an internet cord instead of a TV cord. And then, of course, you can do it a la carte by subscribing to Amazon and Hulu and Netflix and, you know, building a package that way. The nice thing about PlayStation View is in some areas, and LA is one of them, they have locals, live locals. So you can get your local channels, which is really a nice feature.
And would that be in high definition as well?
It would be. Although, if you put an antenna out and you're in Studio City, so it would work, you aim it at Mount Wilson, you could get the best quality HD over the air, but you have to get a digital antenna and digital tuner. But that's easily the best. If you're within the metro and you can get a signal from the metropolitan area, that's always going to be your best high-def signal because it's less compressed than an internet or satellite or any other way of getting it, or cable even. Leo, love talking about cord cutting. It is the future, isn't it? Look at how many people have used DirecTV Now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech guy.
You're out.
Thank you. I think everybody has ESPN. I'm not sure about NFL Network. You have to go and look. It's a little comparison shopping. He is Johnny Jet, yeah. He travels everywhere, yeah. Johnny Jet, our travel guru, is here. Time once again to talk about using technology to plan your travels to save your money. Hello, Johnny Jet. Oh, he's in
Leo.
He's in his new studio, looking good. You got the map of the world behind you and all that.
Yes, actually, I just flew in from New York City about 2 hours ago.
Oh, that's good, because you made it in before your visa expired, I see.
I took the 7 a.m. out of JFK, landed right before 10 o'clock.
Nice.
And I'm feeling it right now, because I was out late last night.
Oh, yeah? New York, the city that never sleeps.
That's right. But actually, I was supposed to come home tomorrow night, and I was bragging to my friends that, you know, my upgrade cleared 3 days in advance, and then Natalie's grandmother sadly passed away last night, and
I'm
so
sorry.
I had to buy a last-minute ticket. So a good tip, by the way, you know, I always tell people to use your miles, but it's also good to keep some miles handy.
Oh,
because if there's ever a death or anything like that, you know, sometimes tickets are really expensive, especially that last minute. Fortunately, the New York-LA route is not expensive. I bought a ticket for $415.
So my experience with miles is you can't often get the flights you want.
Well, if you do it in advance, you can't. But if you do it last minute, you can.
Oh.
So that's actually the best way to use your miles. I have friends who plan their vacations, but they don't really know if they're definitely going until a few days before they start checking. I mean, they check constantly. But the airlines usually don't release the seats until a week or a few days before because the airlines want to make as much money as they can. So they just try and sell it. But when they realize they're not going to sell it, then they start opening it up.
So you want to be on a flight that's not always booked. You want to be on a less popular flight maybe or that kind of thing.
Well, not just that, but, you know, let's say you want to go to Hong Kong. You can call up right now and you ask if you can get a first class ticket or a business class ticket, and they'll say there's nothing available for the next 9 months.
Right.
But if you ask if there's something available this week, tomorrow, or tonight, they'll be like, oh, yeah, we can get you on there.
Why is that?
Because, again, they want to make money, so they release them last minute for the freaking flyers. Just say, hey.
Oh, okay. All right.
But actually, at the New York Times, actually, this was at the Chicago Travel Adventure Show last week. I learned a tip from Peter Greenberg. So his tip is, I don't know if it works because I haven't used it yet, but he says, you know, book your ticket for, let's say you want to go to Hawaii for Thanksgiving, and you can't use it then, obviously. But just book it from some day they'll allow you to do it. Far and off in a distance, and then go to the airport, stand by, print it up, go to the gate agent, not the gate agent, to the agent, and ask if you could fly standby. And usually he says they do. I don't know if it's true. I'm going to have to try it out sometime, but that is a good little trick if it is true.
Wow. This is good stuff. So I should not plan vacations until the last minute. I should just say, okay, I'm going now.
If you want to use your miles,
right.
it's in my experience and a lot of others. And also, by the way, if you want to use your miles, there are services out there that will do it for you. I know people are like, oh, I don't want to deal with it. Every time I call, I can't do it. I don't know how many miles. But there are services out there that will, you know, I think it costs $120 or $150, and they'll book it all for you.
So how many miles should you keep banked in reserve in case of an emergency? 50?
Well, the miles are getting – every day they're getting devalued. So,
right.
And I always tell people to use them. But again, I like to keep them in the bank a little bit just in case of emergencies.
Right. I just used up almost all my miles for that trip after Christmas back east to see my mom. Well, I thought, I'm, you know, I want to use them up. I'm afraid they're going to – I don't know. I don't know. It feels like United. These are United miles. I don't know if they even want to give miles anymore. It feels like that's a failed thing.
Well,
now it's all about benefits.
They want to make money.
It's all
trying to make money.
It's all about getting on before somebody else. Things like that, right? It seems like that. You know, everybody's trying to get global. What is it? Global entry? Global service?
Global services for United. You're correct. That's the ultra freaking flyer.
Because they get on before everybody.
Right. You have to spend at least. Usually, they say they haven't made it public how much you have to spend, but it's usually about $50,000 a year.
Wow.
And that's why they do it. Now you can understand. And American does it. That's called Concierge Key. And Delta does it.
But you don't know ahead of time what you need to do to get it. You just one day get a call from the head guy and says, so congratulations.
I am the next highest tier on American.
Platinum. You're not even global
concierge
services?
Key. It's you concierge key.
You don't have a concierge key yet?
No, I don't spend $40,000 or $50,000 a year. So,
part of the reason, I bet, is because you go different airlines, right? I mean,
I do.
Yeah. Sometimes I think, you know, I had United for a long time, and they got such, like, it was the worst airline. So I just, when they bonded, whatever they did, merged with Continental, I gave up. So I go on whatever airline is, you know, the cheapest at this point. I don't try.
But I'm also buying inexpensive tickets, including today. My ticket was $415 last minute walk up, which is really good.
Right.
That's why I bought it instead of using miles. I could have used miles. I could have used 12,500 today, which is a great deal.
What's the best mileage program out there right now?
Alaska Airlines, everyone is raving about.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Because they still offer 1 mile per mile flown instead of how much you spent.
Yeah, it used to be a mile per buck, right? Something like
that. You used to get a mile per mile flown.
Oh, yeah.
And now what the airlines are doing, like American and United and Delta, if you don't have any status, it's 5 times what you spend. So my ticket today, $400, I got about 2,000 miles on that.
Right. Okay.
No, that is if I was a general member, but since I have a really high status, I get 11 times. So I got 4,000 miles.
Do you have an app or a website for
us? I do.
Okay, because we're going to run out of time if you do.
Okay, so one app, by the way, I used to recommend this website, gethuman.com. It's old. The website's terrible because they now try and charge you money, like $20, but their app is still good. So, and they give you the free information. So let's say you are trying to call the airline to get your miles. So what you can do is you don't have status and you don't want to wait on hold forever, and they have these annoying automated prompts. You put in whatever company you're calling. It doesn't even have to be travel. They have, you know, thousands of companies, but you can put in American Airlines or whatever you're flying, and they'll tell you what prompts to hit. So you can just get to an operator as soon as possible.
Oh, it might be like 00#133, but you just do it and it gets you a human right away. Get human.
Right. Get human.
Get
so human. You might even have a better website for this or app if you ever use these. But
I don't.
I used to
use them all the time. I didn't realize they were charging now.
Well, their website, terrible. But the app is still good, although it's still outdated. I mean, they still have some airlines that are no longer around, like US Airways and AirTran. So they need to update it, but I believe all their prompts are still updated.
Here's a little tip. If you Google Get Human and then the company, Google, at least for now, is showing you some of the information. Maybe
I like that.
They're scraping it off of Get Human, but I don't know.
They're definitely scraping it.
Yeah, they're scraping it.
Yeah.
All right. 67 seconds if you want to do something else.
How about I'll give you since you're up in the wine country, have you heard of this thing called drink pure wine? For people who.
No, but it's my motto. Yes. What?
For people who have allergies.
Oh.
So it's a thing they sell. I think it's $24 for 6 of them, and you stir it in your wine.
Oh, it takes
wine,
the sulfites out.
And it takes them all out. So that way, if you're allergic, this is great for travelers.
This is a good idea. A lot of people travel get headaches from sulfites. I have to be very careful about some wines, yeah. Oh,
yeah, so
this
these
is
guys
interesting.
Are,
it's a filter.
In your neighborhood.
It's a wand.
It's a wand.
It's a wand. You swirl
it's
it.
It's called
you,
the wand.
You swirl the wand, and then you soak it 3 minutes, and then you can enjoy your wine. Does it change the taste?
Supposedly not. I'm not a big wine drinker, so.
I'm going to get one and I'll tell you.
But someone was talking about it at one of the conferences, so
that's
I wrote it down in my notes.
That's a good idea. Johnny Jett, you'll find him at johnnyjett.com, and you really should go there and sign up for his free travel newsletters. He's got a great fare-finding application there, too, and follow him on Twitter and Instagram. He's a wealth of information. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're going to see you soon.
Yeah, sorry, I went off on the mileage stuff.
No, that's very useful stuff. Pete, that's, I think, probably the number one thing people want to know.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean,
it used to be a really good thing. I feel like it's less so.
It is. One of the things I talk about at these shows that I speak at is how to get upgraded. And so a big portion of that is about using your miles.
I still have a United credit card. That's how, yep, I get most of my miles, because I just charge stuff and I get a mile for every buck I spend, or something like that.
Yeah, because these days, flying, you're not getting your miles. Like the old days, people would go on mileage runs. Now they're going on status runs. So, because mileage runs, you're not earning a lot of miles, but you're still earning the status, so you can get that elite level like we were talking about.
People are playing for status now, not money.
Right. And that's why I bought my ticket today instead of using my miles, because I was like, you know what? I will at least get my status miles out of this.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much – and, they spoil you because you do get upgraded a lot. I got upgraded to New York. I got upgraded for my flight tomorrow night back from New York, but I did not get upgraded today.
Everybody likes status.
Well, it makes a big difference when you're flying across country in a lie-flat seat.
Oh, man. That's why we
being served Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Oh, did you go on Mint?
No, I was on American.
American has a lie-flat seat?
Oh yeah, they have a very good product.
I used to love American. That was always my choice.
New York, San Francisco, or New York, LA, they have a really good product.
I'll try it.
Same thing. Also, their 777s, 300s, when they're flying to Sydney or to London, their LA, London is, considered, they're considered tops for business.
Really,
class.
American. All right, I'll have to try.
Yeah,
it.
They're new planes.
Are they with Delta and Air France? No.
Air France and Delta is SkyTeam.
SkyTeam, that's right.
American is One World.
One World.
But Americans, the flight attendants are not as friendly. The service is usually not as good, although sometimes it is. Although, I don't know if you've been reading in the news about the flight attendants' uniforms. That's been causing a lot of problems.
Yeah, that's weird.
10% of the flight attendants are getting these really bad reactions. And one of my friends is a flight attendant. She sent me really crazy, disturbing pictures. Not only rashes, but they're in the hospital with nebulizers.
And they're claiming there's nothing wrong with these uniforms. These guys are just crazy.
Yeah, but it's not. They're not. So.
All right.
All right. We'll see you next week.
See you next week in studio. We'll put a microphone out for you.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Johnny. Bye-bye. Yeah, Guy, I talked a little bit about the Pixel 2 at the beginning of the show. Guy Smiley, I think, asked me, or was it, no, Bill in Michigan asked me about my hearing curve. I have it somewhere. Yeah, I got it from them. You know what's awesome? One of the things I like best about Samsung phones is you can actually, they have this adapt sound technology. You run a little hearing test on the phone, and then it gives you a custom curve for whenever you have headphones plugged in, which is fantastic. I can't remember where my high end falls off. Oh, I was going to play. Here, let me play the music. I got a good song here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We're taking your calls, talking high tech. Alan is in, how do you say that? Perkasie? Perkasie, PA?
Perkasie.
Hello. Hello, Alan.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Leo, I've geeked myself into a corner and I need your help.
Uh-oh. I didn't like that. I geeked myself into a corner.
Yeah.
I do that a lot.
I'm trying to protect myself from two things on the internet. Yeah.
One, all of my wireless devices, and two, my teenager.
Uh-huh. Oh, dear.
So I've looked at Cujo, and I'm trying to figure out if it would be better to use a device like Cujo and put it into the network, or if it would be better to actually do something like OpenDNS on my router.
Yeah. They're similar, but OpenDNS is less... It depends how adversarial a situation you're in with your teen at this point. So he could always...
So OpenDNS it is.
Yeah. Because he could... Cujo is a hardware firewall that does, you know, all of that securing stuff. But it could be, you know, it's a physical thing that he could go over and unplug.
And does.
And does. So there you have it. Your answer, my friend. The way you do OpenDNS is you go into your router, and of course your router is password protected, and you change the DNS settings in the router. And then every device will at that point go through OpenDNS's DNS lookup, and they have lots of great filtering and stuff. But there are increasingly routers out there that have this built into it. I think Cujo is a really interesting idea. It's not the first time we've seen these security, home security devices. Of course, all businesses have Cujo-like appliances, security appliances. We do, running between us and the outside world. And they can protect you in a lot of great ways that even OpenDNS doesn't keep, for instance, malware attached to emails from coming through. Stuff like that is very, very handy. And so you may want to keep Cujo, but then have OpenDNS as a second line of defense. Now, remember, unfortunately, most teenagers these days have smartphones, which don't go through your router at all. So you can't really stop what they're doing on their smartphone. As you know,
although can I go through and change the DNS on his phone to go to OpenDNS?
Well, you could, but then I guess it depends on how well you lock it down. The thing is, as soon as he goes to the mobile network, all bets are off.
Yeah.
Right? So all he has to do is disable Wi-Fi, go on, open his phone, disable Wi-Fi or disconnect from Wi-Fi, and now he's searching on the mobile network, and he has, you know, free flowing access to the internet. It's getting harder and harder. Frankly, we're losing this battle.
Yeah. He's a better hacker than I am.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, I always said, use these things when your kids are young and they most need protection, right? But at some point, around 12, 13, 14, they're going to get smart enough to get around it. And at that point, there's not much you can do. You know, you could even, you know, somebody's posted in the chat room a way to bypass OpenDNS. So, there was a website called peacefire.org that was created by a teenager. He since became an adult and maintained the site for a long time, that showed teenagers how to get around internet filtering. He said teenagers deserve the right to free access to the internet. And so it was, you know, every teenager 5 years ago knew about peacefire.org and it had all the ways to get around it. Once kids get that sophisticated, I think then it's time to start talking about what they're doing, you know, making rules. And you got to treat it like everything else you do with a teenager. You can't control if they take the car and start playing chicken or, you know, drag racing. You can't stop them from doing that either. You have to use more wily means, including talking to them. So,
oh, God, no.
Thank God my kids are in their 20s now. I don't have to worry about it so much. Lisa has a 14. We have a 14-year-old now again, so I'm back in that role. And he's very computer literate. So I think we have a signed agreement. We went to saferkids.org and got downloaded an internet contract and had a signed agreement. And then... among other things, it has, you know, penalties like disconnecting you from the internet or maybe, you know, taking away your smartphone. The good thing about giving kids a smartphone is now you have another way to punish them.
Yes, absolutely.
I always think of it that way.
Works really well.
Oh, man, that's the worst thing you could do to somebody. Of course, you pay a little too.
You take it away and then you can't transfer the earth.
You can't reach them and you can't track them. So it's a double-edged sword. It's hard to be a parent. It always has been. It's even harder in this era. The internet has changed so many things, and one of the things that's really dramatically impacted is parenting. But it's also, you know, impacted education. I mean, for the better in some ways. If the kid is motivated to learn something now, he can learn it in a million ways on the internet. So there's, you know, good and bad. So yeah, did you buy Cujo? Tell me about it, because I haven't.
Yeah, I do have Cujo, and I have Fios, and I'm also looking at, do I disconnect the wireless on Fios and put a mesh system in the house, like either amplifier or Linksys? And
certainly those mesh systems are a good solution if you are having trouble keeping Wi-Fi working in various parts of the house. If you have dead spots or the Wi-Fi goes up and down a lot. We had that problem, and I've tried them all. Eero, which is a sponsor, I should mention, disclaimer there, Google Wi-Fi, Orbi. I had the Luma on order. They canceled it because Amazon was having trouble delivering on that, but I'll get those eventually. Plume, you mentioned... also, Linksys and what was the other company? Amplify comes from a company that kind of invented this mesh networking system. So I'm very interested in Amplify, but it's a hard product to get. They keep running out. So that's only if you have Wi-Fi issues. And in any case, you might still use the Cujo, although a lot of these mesh systems say don't put anything between us and your internet, because we want to control everything. So you know, they become your hardware router as well as your Wi-Fi router. That way they can do some of the fancy things that they do, including, and I love this feature for a teenager, you can do this with Eero and some of the others. With Eero, you identify every device. You know, I can tell which devices are Michael's computer, his iPad, his iPhone, and I can actually go into the app and pause his internet. Not mine, but his. I can even use it with the Amazon Echo. I could say, Echo, pause Michael's internet. and all of a sudden, he can't get online. Now, it doesn't work with a smartphone unless you've disabled data on the smartphone, but because they can always go around it to the cellular carrier. But that might be another thing to do, is disable data. It's a lot of work, and they're much more motivated to get around it than you are to spend every waking hour keeping them from getting around it.
Yeah, they don't have a full-time job.
Yeah, it's like squirrels. It's like squirrels. You can do everything possible to keep squirrels out of your attic. They're going to still get in. Teenagers are much like that. Yeah, they got nothing else to do except get around your internet restrictions. And talk to girls.
I appreciate it, Leo. I knew you would have to.
Yeah, so is Cujo working for you? Do you like it?
I do like it. There's a couple of times that I'm like, I really don't think, you know, that my Amazon Echo device is trying to connect to a bad site.
This is always the balance with these, with security and convenience, right? True security limits what you can do incredibly. And to be honest, I mean, we have full-time IT guys managing our internet, you know, appliances, our gateways. And it's a lot of work to make sure everything works, but you're still secured, et cetera, et cetera. I'll have to take a look at Cujo. It's one of a number of new kind of security appliances for the home. That's very interesting.
Although I did think it was funny when I called Fios for tech support one time, and they said, well, let's just see how many devices you attach. And I'm like, uh-oh.
They know. Of course they know. They see every one of them. Oh, you wanted privacy? I'm sorry. The internet is not made for privacy. And how big was the number, by the way?
40.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing now?
Yeah.
That's fairly typical. I would say the average household has between 20 and 40 devices connected to the internet at any given time. That's amazing. Alan, it's good to talk to you. I'll remember Percassi from now on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls coming up. Hour number 3, just around the corner. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And outside that area, you can still call us. Just use Skype. It should be a Skype out. Should be a free call for you. 888-827-5536. And incidentally, you can also use our website, not only for the phone number, but a link to the chat room and answers to every question, links to everything I talk about, and that is techguylabs.com. Just remember that. That's all you need. Techguylabs.com. Back to the phones. Mark in Temecula, California. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Leo. Thanks so much for taking my call.
My pleasure. I'm so glad you called. What can I do for you?
I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and now I'm in need of your assistance. I've got an iPhone 6 running version 9.1, so as far as I can tell, I'm one update behind intentionally, and here's why. I've got a MacBook Pro from 2008 that's running Snow Leopard, and I've got iTunes, obviously, on board there. I don't have the version number in front of me. I apologize, but I'm confused as to whether or not an update, for example, to my iPhone, will then eliminate my old MacBook Pro's ability to connect with it. I've heard people talk about needing to maybe just get a cheap MacBook just to update their phone, because now they have, let's say, an updated version of the iPhone or an updated version of the operating system. Do you have a cheat sheet or a destination that I could use to figure out what updates will connect with what versions of iOS and different operating systems, let's say, for example, on a MacBook Pro?
That's such a great question, because this happens to people sometimes. They'll update their iPhone, and suddenly you not only have to update your iTunes, but then it says, oh, and you can't update your iTunes unless you can update your Mac OS X, and you can't update your Mac OS X unless you update a computer. So literally an upgrade of software to your iPhone can require a computer upgrade.
Yes.
And that is not what you want.
It is not, sir, because my budget will not support that at this time.
Yeah. Well, and that's asking a little bit from on Apple, okay? So iTunes 10, I mean iOS 10, which is the next generation, and we're actually up to 10.2.1 as of Monday, requires iTunes 12.5.1, okay?
Okay.
So, my guess is you are not going to want to upgrade iOS because, let's see, you're on, which one's Snow Leopard?
That's correct.
Last version of iTunes to support Lion is 12.2. I'm not sure. What you need to find out is what the most recent version of iTunes will work on Snow Leopard.
Right.
I think you're probably all right, but you're very prudent to ask. And then I do know that iOS 10 needs 12.5.1.
Okay.
So that's half of the puzzle, and then we got to figure out what's the latest version of iTunes on Snow Leopard. Let me see if I can find that.
I appreciate the research, and I don't know if other users out there, either in the chat room or over the radio airwave, have experienced the same thing. I consider myself pretty technically adept, and I'm embarrassed to say that I'm a little gun-shy to update my phone for fear of not being able to upload photos and save text messages and
all. Very frustrating. And at some point, you're going to be at a disadvantage on iOS 9. So,
okay. Yes. Okay.
I have a feeling your instinct to not upgrade is probably correct.
Okay.
I'm looking at Apple support discussions is what I'm looking at. I wish Apple would just have a table. Wouldn't it be nice?
Yes.
Just a table that says, okay, Snow Leopard, latest, last version of iTunes you could use, last version of iOS you could use.
Yes.
Let me see here. Dr. Mom, who's a wizard on the keyboard. We missed you, Doctor. She was in Antarctica the last couple of weeks in the chat room. She says, here's Mac and software that will run with Snow Leopard. Well, I'm going to have to parse this because it's a lot of text. But
sure.
We'll put this is in the show notes. We'll put a link to this. That's the question. You got the linkage exactly right. iOS requires a certain level of iTunes. A certain level of iTunes requires a certain level of Mac OS. You got to make sure that triggering one doesn't send you this upgrade cascade. What a mess that is. And I have heard from people in the past with exactly that problem. I think I got to buy a new Mac now just to use my iPhone. What?
What? Right. It's a brilliant business model, but like I said, my budget won't support the business model right
now. Yeah, and that's the question. I mean, it depends on your how cynical you are. If one was a cynic, one would say, well, Apple's just clearly doing that to force people to buy new hardware because that's their revenue model. They give away the software. They give away the operating system. iTunes is free. iOS is free. macOS is free. But you got to buy the hardware, and they're making kind of a forced upgrade. The less cynical, the more... Apple understanding of us might say, well, but there are technical reasons that you need to have, this hardware to work with this software to work with this hardware. And it's probably a mixture of both. Certainly Apple's incented to get you to upgrade. It's the same thing with Microsoft, by the way. I mean, they really pressured people to go to Windows 10. And there were good reasons for that. The newer versions of the operating systems tend to be more secure, more capable. It's generally better for everybody if the entire user base is on the same operating system, because that way developers and everybody and security research and everybody can say, well, I know this is the base model that we're going to be working with. We'd have to work with 100 different models.
Excellent. I do appreciate you taking my call, and I will check on those show notes because...
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I think you're probably right to... hold off because you have an older Mac. Now, remember that, and this probably is worth remembering too, you don't have to connect to iTunes anymore. So it may be, you may want to connect to iTunes because that's how you like to do a hardware backup, via a cable, and that's faster and so forth. But Apple has eliminated that requirement and has for some years said you could do it all over Wi-Fi. So you can sync up music, sync up photos, backup all over wireless over the network. They don't require a Mac of any stripe to do that. So that's the fix, and that's why Apple probably isn't in trouble for doing this. They say, well, there is a way. The recommended way, in fact, does not require a Macintosh at all. I do feel that at some point the computer industry lost its way. We love Apple for so many years because Apple was the little guy, the scrappy little guy who cared more about users than profits, or at least that was the image, right? They were computing for the rest of us. They were making a computer that was easier to use. It wasn't so, techy, and it was better hardware. And I mean, it felt like, at least at the time, maybe I was deluded, but it felt like it was just a better way to go. But at some point, And by the way, Amazon kind of made its name for being customer-centric, right? We care more about the customer than we do our profits, or at least they understood our profits are tied to customer satisfaction. And so we think it's good business to make sure that customers are, super served at all times. And then at some point, it wasn't too long ago, a few years ago, that went out the window. And it was just dog eat dog and everybody for himself. Make as much money as you can as fast as you can and screw the competition, which is what Amazon does now. They don't sell any Apple TV products because they consider it the competition. It's suddenly less about us as users and more about their profits. And I think that's too bad. At least as a user, I do. I suppose if I were a shareholder, I might not. His profits certainly are soaring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. You want to call and talk high tech? That's what we're doing here right now. Marnie in Orange County, California is next. Hi, Marnie.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. The sun is gorgeous out today. So
we needed some springtime weather out here in California.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I have a question that seems to have been related to Carbonite, but may possibly involve Dropbox as well.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So Carbonite, love it, because I can see that the files are being backed up. The little orange and green,
right.
They call them badges, I guess, right?
Yep.
Well, All of a sudden, I was not seeing those little orange and green dots next to each file. And so I went online with Carbonite to try to figure out how to get them back. And it looks like the checkbox that's supposed to be checked that enables those to show is checked. So that was fine. But basically what they were saying was that Dropbox was interfering with it somehow.
Yeah, because Dropbox does the same thing. This is kind of a kludgy thing, these little badges that get put on folders and files to let you know whether they've been backed up, they're up to date. And almost every cloud-based storage solution does this. And they do it by hooking into the operating system and the way the icons are displayed. And what Carbonite's saying, and it might be Dropbox, it might be something else, is that, well, we're being blocked by somebody else trying to do the same thing.
Right.
And I would guess, and we should mention Carbonite is a sponsor of the show.
I love Carbonite.
Yeah, and it's a great solution. I mean, it's really kind of a convenience. You know, it's more to let you know that Carbonite's actually doing something. It's certainly not part of the functionality. It's still backing up. You know, it's just letting you know that this has been backed up or it's pending backup, that kind of thing.
Well, here's the thing. It is probably more of a convenience than anything else. But I did, when I realized that wasn't happening anymore, that, you know, that the dots weren't showing anymore.
Right.
And Carbonite basically told me there was nothing they could do. I did some research, and apparently this is a common problem, and a lot of other people online anyway were having this problem.
Right.
So, you know, in one of the forums or wherever that I was in, they said to go in and change this one thing in the registry so that it would redirect it, I guess.
Okay.
And I did that, but that didn't work. And, like you said, it's much more of a convenience than anything else. But it just makes me nervous not seeing the dots. I know it's an elementary thing, but it just makes me nervous.
Yeah, and is it the shell icon overlay identifiers registry key that you modified? Does that sound familiar?
No, I just remember I went into RegEdit.
There is a registry key where this is enabled.
Yeah.
And it keeps track of all the different programs that want to use shell. This is called shell icon overlays. It makes sense, right? It's an overlay on top of the icon. And the shell is what displays the icon. So this is a registry key called Shell Icon Overlay Identifiers.
Okay.
Under that key, there will be entries for all the programs that do it, including Dropbox and Carbonite, if you have both of those installed.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as soon as Dropbox updates, which it does pretty regularly, that's the first thing it fixes. fix it, it's going to come right back.
Okay.
And in general, I don't think it's a good idea to get in there in the registry. The reason is you can modify the registry. Registry changes occur instantly, and it's not difficult at all to accidentally modify the registry in such a way that your machine stops working.
Well, exactly. And honestly, I mean, I had to do some meditation before I went into
Yeah. Well, if you're very careful to follow the instructions, you don't accidentally hit the backspace key at an inopportune moment, you're probably okay. But I get, and you, of course, you could always uninstall Dropbox, but you like Dropbox. There's no reason that you, yeah.
Yeah.
So the two are fighting, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And it's weird that that it's not an option that I can even turn off in Dropbox. I can't even.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. The one other thing that maybe you didn't do, when you go into this shell icon overlay identifiers registry key, and you find I think there's, according to the article I'm looking at right now, 8 different Dropbox entries there. What you want to do is turn off Dropbox, you know, stop Dropbox, delete it, and then restart Dropbox. You've got to make sure you do that. You can't do it while Dropbox is running or it won't have any effect.
Okay, that's like I did not do that. But I do remember seeing the multiple Dropbox lines, and basically what they did was they said to change the name, like add a 1 or something.
You can press the delete key and delete them.
Okay.
So the trick, though, and actually you didn't do it, so this is why it didn't take. You exit Dropbox, do it, and then restart Dropbox.
Okay. All right. I'll try that.
As Dr. Morbius in our chat room is saying, stop Dropbox and roll. No.
Good fun.
have fun. Take care. Yeah, it's handy. I mean, it is not technically required for the program to do its job, but it is very handy for you to know that it's doing its job. And I think a lot of times with stuff in the that operates like Dropbox and Carbon I do in the background, you do want to know, oh, this, you know, I changed the file. Oh, good. I see the dots. Okay. It's been backed up. Now I see the green light. And, oh, good. It's done. That's useful information. Not required. This is the point, I guess. Not required for the operation of the program. It's purely cosmetic. So the program is still working. You just don't have any way of knowing, really, which is, I don't know. I like to know. Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great, thanks. My beautiful wife would not let me talk to you without saying we miss Kate and Leo.
Oh, my goodness. You go way back to 1998 when Kate Botello and I hosted the Screensavers on the old Tech TV cable channel.
Yeah, man. Loved it.
She came out last year because we've revitalized. We've brought the Screensavers back. We do the new Screensavers now, my podcast network. It's not quite the same. We don't have the resources Tech TV did. But she came back and hosted on our one-year anniversary, and it was like old times. It was so much fun to see her again. She's doing great, though.
Is it still available to see on the site?
Sure. twit.tv/ I think NSS. And then it was episode 52, I think.
All right, I'll poke around.
So the podcast network is twit.tv. The new Screensavers is twit.tv/NSS. And then I think if you just do twit.tv/NSS51, let me just see. This should take you to the episode with Kate on it. Nope, not 51, 52, because it was our one-year anniversary. So I'm guessing at the show number.
Yeah,
yep, 52. So twit.tv/NSS52, and you'll see me and Kate together again. Kate hasn't aged a day. I look a lot older.
She's a cutie.
She's the greatest. Hey, we've used up our little bit of time before the bottom of the hour, but hang on, okay? When we come back from news at the bottom of the hour, I'll take your call, okay?
Thank you.
All right, Mark. Appreciate it. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. Yes, I'll put a link to that. And I should take this as an opportunity to plug the fact that when the radio shows off, I continue to talk tech all week long at our podcast network, twit.tv.
You're out.
Thank you. So somebody was talking about fourth in the chat room. Caught my eye. There's actually a very good fourth implementation out there called SwiftFourth. It's $400 to buy, but you can try it free forever. I think you'd only have to buy it if you were going to deliver programming. But this is for Windows, Mac, and Linux. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's see. We were talking to Harry. I'm sorry, not Harry. Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I think it was you, Mark.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Hey, Mark.
Yes, sir. Hey. So down to business now. I wanted to talk to you about my Pixel XL, which I finally got from Verizon.
Yeah, they were way back ordered, weren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I'm wondering why. You know, I've only read one article anywhere that mentioned the shortage of pixels, and I haven't heard why there's such a shortage. That's not why I called. But
it is widely known that it's very hard to get them, that you're going to wait 6 weeks now to get them. Even Verizon, which had plentiful pixels for a while, is running out. And there must be some manufacturing issue. Either that or the demand far outpaced Google's expectation. It is widely agreed to be the best Android phone at this point.
I really like it.
I do too. Yeah, I really like it. Yeah.
Outlook does not run well on mine, but at any rate, the reason I called is a feature that they show with this is the Google Wi-Fi Assistant, and it supposedly, when you go out into the world, it can recognize good, strong hotspots, and it will automatically connect you to a VPN.
Yes.
I haven't tested that. Have you tested that?
Yes, and it works. And this is actually really good. So you, in normal circumstances, you would not want your phone to join you to random open hotspots. That's dangerous, right? Because who knows who's running that hotspot or what they're doing with it? The only way to make it safe would to be run an encrypted connection through that hotspot so that even if a bad guy was running it, he couldn't access your phone through it and you couldn't see, he couldn't see what you were doing. And so Google, which wanted to have this feature, a feature, by the way, that I'm pretty sure I've disabled because I still don't like the idea. But if you're going to do it, that's the only way to do it. Now, how is Google doing this? Well, they're running their own VPN servers. So essentially, when your phone's in that mode, it's connecting to Google's server, which is then connecting you to the outside world. So it's not such a difficult thing to do, and it probably doesn't have a lot of overhead given how much bandwidth Google has and the and how distributed, well-distributed its server farms are. It probably is not a big hit in overhead. But it absolutely does work, and it's kind of a clever idea.
I thought they had a white list or a list that they had developed of safer.
Well, maybe. I'm assuming that they went through Google. If they're going through third-party VPNs, that's a little surprising.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like the way I would want to do it if I were Google, but maybe they couldn't. I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
Maybe but you turned yours off, you said.
I'm pretty sure I did. I'm checking right now to make sure that I did. I don't like joining any Wi-Fi access points, and not merely because of the safety thing. I think they've handled that, but also you'll join access points that don't have any internet connection or access points that I don't like the idea. So I want it to stay on cell connection unless I specifically say otherwise. Let me just see where I found. I don't know where I found that. It's under, and actually I do have it turned on. So never mind. It's under configure Wi-Fi, use open Wi-Fi automatically. And mine is still on. So there you go. I guess I didn't even notice that it was using it, which gives you an idea of how good it is. One of the, there's a lot of, for instance, in this area, remember that Comcast, if you use Comcast's Wi-Fi router, will open a public Wi-Fi router access point on your router so that there's Xfinity Wi-Fi all over this area. And sometimes you join it, and it's terrible connection, or it's really slow. But I note that Google says, let a Wi-Fi assistant automatically connect to open networks determined to be high quality. So clearly they're testing it. The whole thing makes me a little nervous. I'd love to get some security experts giving me more, because I'm not an expert on all of this, and you would want to probably do it. Now, here's an article that somebody in the chat room has given us from, of all things from today, from Ars Technica. Majority of Android VPNs can't be trusted to make users more secure. Oh, this is a different side. This is if you pay for a VPN. They're saying of the 300 VPN apps downloaded on the Android store, a research paper showed 18% didn't do any encryption at all. 16% injected code. 84% leaked traffic. So they're not very high quality. So I would stick with Google's solution or a known good solution, something that you've had vetted.
Okay.
Yeah, and maybe just turn it off. I don't know. I'll have to ask my friend Steve Gibson, who is the security guru, to take a look at this.
That would be great.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it because I didn't realize it's on by default, and I thought I had turned it off, and I haven't. Thank you. Have a good day. Take care. Bye-bye, Mark. Great question. Yeah, so what is a VPN? The idea is a virtual private network. And, people started using these originally at work because if you had an internal network at your work that you wanted to access when you were at home, it wouldn't be secure for you just to go on the public internet and log into your corporate computer. That's clearly a dangerous prospect. So companies started running virtual private networks that would act, you would be at home, but you would be as if you were on the corporate network. And they did that by, in the old days, putting special software on your desktop computer and running a server at the office. You would run the special software on your computer, and it would create an encrypted link to the computer at work. And then it's as if you're at work. You could do everything at home that you would do at work. It's a great solution. And since it's been commercialized, You can run, in some cases, certainly you could run your own VPN server at your house and then use client software. And most operating systems now can do this without additional software. Connect to your home server. And what that does is when you're at a coffee shop or an insecure Wi-Fi access point, you're connected to your home server and then joining the public internet. And so anybody in the area at the coffee shop can't see what you're doing. It's completely encrypted and invisible to them. They could just they see you have a connection, but they don't know what you're doing with it. I would guess the reason that so many of these free VPN apps on Android aren't really doing anything or aren't doing the right thing or even worse, injecting code into your system is because they're free and they're not fully vetted. There are good companies that, you know, Hotspot VPN and others that offer reliable, well-known, trusted VPN servers. If you don't want to run your own at home, you log into their computer. And the other reason people prefer that is because they can log into a computer that is not in the U.S. So it's not uncommon for there to be geographic restrictions on content you can access from any given country. I'll give you an example. BBC, the BBC does not let you access BBC's streaming content unless you're in the UK. But if you want to get around that, and I'm not recommending this, this is, you know, ethically questionable and possibly even illegal, you could use a VPN with a server in the UK. And then because your traffic, even though if you're in the US, your traffic emerges on the public internet in Britain, the BBC would say, oh, no problem. You must be English. Now, of course, they've gotten smart about that, and they usually block traffic coming in from VPNs and things like that. But it's kind of a cat and mouse game. I do believe in VPNs, and I do recommend using a VPN if you're on an open Wi-Fi access point. And I like the idea that Google's at least attempting to do that. My guess is I'm going to have to look into it. I would think for security reasons, Google would want you to be using servers on their network. But I'll have to check and see. It's a good way to handle that. So when your phone joins an open access point, you're getting better connection, but it's also secure. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you know more about that, give us a ring. Actually, don't give us a ring. Guess who's coming up? Dick DeBartolo, the Gizwiz, with his Gadget of the Week.
You're out.
Now I'm going to check how this works. Google Pixel Open Wi-Fi VPN. Why? To stay connected in places where your cell connection isn't strong, you can have your phone or tablet automatically connect to open Wi-Fi networks that we verified as fast and reliable. Wi-Fi Assistant is a free service that makes these connections for you. It's only available on Pixel and Nexus devices with Android 5.1 and up. Oh, you do get a network maybe monitored message. But I wonder whose servers they use. Well, I guess I'll have to go a little deeper. They're not talking about where the servers live. Hey, Dickie D.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I am great.
Good. Yeah, I use Uncle Louie's VPN.
Uncle Louie's is very good.
Yep. Kind of safe is this, Logan.
Kind of safe, yeah.
We're kind of safe.
What did you expect for nothing? Rubber biscuit? That's their other motto.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's $2 a year.
Wi-Fi Assistant by Google Connectivity Services auto connects you to high quality public Wi-Fi hotspots. Oh, yeah, it is. Okay, so I was correct. It's a secure VPN managed by Google. So these are Google's own VPNs, and that's what I would expect. And you'll know it's working because you'll see a key with a G on it. So I don't think I've ever seen that key with a G. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number, last segment of the show, though, so I think the lines are full at this point. Incidentally, I just checked Google's own documentation for this VPN that they use when you get on open Wi-Fi access points. They call it Google's Wi-Fi Assistant, and it says very specifically that you when it's turned on and it is enabled by default in your Wi-Fi settings, it will auto connect you to high quality public Wi-Fi hotspots and help secure your connection by transmitting through a secure virtual private network managed by Google. So you are going through Google's own VPNs. And you'll know it's happening. And this is something I didn't know. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen this. There's a little icon, a key with a G, that'll appear at the top of the screen when it's using the VPN session. So I guess I haven't joined enough open Wi-Fi spots, or I'll have to check and see. But there you go. From Google's own documentation, they are running through VPNs managed by Google itself, and that's what I would expect. All right, now it's time for Dick DiBartolo. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer ever since the 50s.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's kind of, you started as a kid, literally, as a high school
exactly,
kid.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And he is also a crazy gizmo guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have my last gadget from CES, and I was thinking, Four Moms designs this tech stuff for babies. And then I'm looking at the
is it four as in 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah, the number four.
So there's four of them.
The Four Moms, exactly.
That's neat.
And then I'm looking at the specs and I'm going, they actually designed this for techie people and it has nothing to do with the kids. Because their latest thing is called the Moxie Stroller.
Okay? Oh, what is that? So
the Moxie Stroller, suspension on all four wheels.
off-road stroller.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Generator in the wheel.
What?
USB charging. Headlights. Tail lights.
What the what? That's hysterical. It is for geeks.
Dashboard with speeds. Calories burned.
So it's a powered stroller. It generates electricity as you're strolling.
It generates electricity so that you can have your LED dashboard, so that you can be charging your phone as you're walking.
It's got headlights.
It's got headlights and taillights.
And taillights. Oh, I want this. Who can, I don't even have a baby and I want this.
Yeah, I know. I ordered one too. I think I'll find a kid somewhere.
That's hysterical.
And you can use like last year they had their safety seat that had LEDs that tell you when the safety seat was properly installed in the car. Well, all their other devices can be used with the stroller frame.
So that's kind of cool. So you can have a perambulator.
Exactly.
Or a stroller.
They say,
yeah,
yes, from
nice.
Birth to the kid being 55 pounds.
Oh, well, I could use it then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you'd have to have two of them together.
Oh, 255 pounds. Oh, never mind. Yeah.
No, two of them together. Join them together.
Four of them, Dick. I need four of them.
Oh, okay.
1 foot and one arm in each.
There you go. You've worked it out.
Yes, it would be quite a workout. This is really cool, though. I mean, you know, the stroller market is very competitive right now.
You know, absolutely. Now, this guy is pricey. This is up there like $699.
Ooh.
But I was
so are strollers.
On,
I mean, that's.
I was just going to say, I was looking on Amazon. I see them $450, $550.
Yeah. So what you need? What you need though is get, you know, like do this at a baby shower and get everybody to chip in. I think that's what happens. Oh, and you can get a seat adapter. That's nice. So you can use it as a car seat. Wow. That is wild.
It's pretty neat, isn't it? Yeah. It's one-step fold-up. Yeah, I thought it was kind of
You know what I love is it has autopilot now, and that means you can just let the baby go for a stroll by herself.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, close. I would just do the round-the-block thing until you have some trust in it.
Do you think they'll ever have self-driving strollers?
It wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me either.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Then if anybody, it would come from Four Moms, the number 4moms.com, Four Moms. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
And we should take bets on the first self-driving stroller at CES. What year?
Oh, okay, very good.
I'm thinking 2020, by the year 2020.
Let's see, 17, 20. Yeah, you know, that's probably
about right.
That's a good guess, yeah. Yeah,
I guarantee you, somebody listening right now says, "Oh,
it's
good idea!"
It.
And they're going to start doing it.
Yeah. They're putting aside their self-walking man stroller.
Right. Forget that. And, you know,
going into baby.
You'll find Dick at gizwiz.biz. Show notes are there, so anything he mentions on this show, you can find, except for the man stroller, you can find at the website. Just click the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy. There's also a button there for the What the Heck Is It contest. I want you to play that. It's so much fun. You see a close-up of a gadget or a gizmo or something that Dick has lying around the house, and if you can identify it, you're in the drawing for 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. But don't worry, if you have no idea what it is, all you have to do is come up with a crazy, clever guess, and there's 24 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the best crazy, clever guesses. So you have an even better chance to win. Dick,
perfect.
Always a pleasure. Everybody should watch your podcast, too, with Chad, gizwiz.tv. And we'll see you right here next week.
I'll be here.
Dina in Manhattan Beach.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Dina. How are you?
Good. I have one question. Well, first of all, I wanted to let you know that I've been trying to call you from my cell phone, but since my cell phone's a private number, it won't take any calls. So are you not taking calls from private numbers anymore?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know anything about that. I'll ask. I think we would.
Yeah, but it keeps on telling me that...
Heather, is that true? Do we not take calls from private numbers?
That doesn't seem correct to me.
So Heather doesn't know either. We'll ask the engineers might have changed something. We'll ask around.
My question is, I'm trying to download all my text messages to my MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
How do I do that? So it's time to take the time.
Yeah, you want to save it all. Do you have an iPhone?
I have an iPhone.
Okay, so there's a program for the iPhone that does this from a company called Ecamm, ECAMM.com. ECAMM.
Okay.
.com, and the program's called PhoneView. And what it does, you connect up your phone to your Mac, and it will download all the iOS messages, all the voicemail, all the data, and put it on your Mac. You can search through it. You can archive it. You can figure it out. They have a free download to try. And then if you decide you want it, it's not too expensive to buy. It's like 30 bucks.
Well, it's worth it to me because I interact a lot with my business. So I want to document some of our conversations.
Yeah, you don't want to lose it. I understand. Yeah. Apple really should offer this. I don't know why they don't, but that means there's more room for Ecamm. This is a good company. They do a lot of different cool little utilities. And okay. PhoneView is the one you want.
PhoneView.
Yeah, I put this. Tell you what, all you really ever need to remember when you listen to the show is my website, because we put it all up there. And that's Tech Guy Labs. Hey, nice to talk to you, Dina.
Thank you very much, Leo. I love your show.
Oh, well, bless you. I hope you're going to have a lovely day in Manhattan Beach. You know, you're just down the road from Johnny Jet. Look, go to the volleyball courts on the beach there. You know where those are?
Yeah.
That's Johnny plays there every day. Say, Johnny! And he'll look at you and he'll go, "Hi, love you, Johnny." I listen to you on the Tech Guy. You live in a beautiful place, man. If I could afford a house in Manhattan Beach, I'd be living there too. It's gorgeous.
Oh, I know. I'm grateful for my husband.
Yeah. Well, I am too. Thank you, Dina. Take Bye-bye. Care. And I thank you all. I'm grateful for you. Thanks to Mike Cozio for doing the great job with the music, our musical director, Heather Hammond, our phone ranger for answering the phones. But most of all, thanks to you and your local station for caring and listening to The Tech Guy. We'll be back next time. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.